You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jose Garcia Villa was born on August 5, 1908 in Manila, but it was in New York that he came into his own in the 1940s as the only Asian poet in a circle of modern literary giants that included E. Cummings, Mark Van Doren, W.H. Auden, Tennessee Williams, and a young Gore Vidal. Tomorrow is the centennial celebration of Jose Garcia Villa's life and work as a poet, literary critic, short story writer, and painter, and Penguin Classic has released a collection of his poetry, including previously unpublished material under the title Dovaglian. The collection was edited by John Edwin Cowan, a professor at Fairleigh Dickinson University, and has an introduction by Luis H. Francia of NYU. Both were former students of Villa's, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome them to the show today. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Greetings.
John, you studied poetry with Villa from 64 to 97, really, on and off?
I should win some kind of an award for that, maybe.
You were already teaching for a long time at that point.
Yes. There was a little interruption in the beginning, but actually I returned to Villa in 1973 and studied with him nonstop through 97.
Even though he'd quit writing poetry himself?
He actually stopped writing poetry in 1958.
Yes. And Luis, you met him under very different academic circumstances at Smith's Bar in the early 1970s.
I thought that was...
Were you going there to learn something?
Well, to imbibe, as I learned. My oldest brother knew him and said one night, why don't you come along and meet Jose Garcia Villa? And I said, that would be terrific. I mean, I knew of him, and I was new to New York, and I said, what better way to learn and find out about New York than to meet, you know, the poet that I'd always heard about back in Manila.
Now, is it Villa or Villa? Because I thought in the Philippines it would have been pronounced Villa.
No, in Spanish it would be Villa, yeah. But he was used to being addressed as Villa.
Now, were either of you ever subjected to the withering criticism that he was so famous for?
Oh, sure.
Of course.
you couldn't
Some
avoid
people would
it.
Be chased away.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when I first met Villa, I wanted to go straight to his advanced course. I didn't want to take the beginners because I had already been an English major, and I wanted to start right at the top. Well, he put me in my place that first night and let me know that I really knew nothing about poetry and drove that home.
And was he right?
He was right that I did not know the lyrical form of poetry. And he, Villa, believed that poetry had to be lyrical, and it had to have formal excellence and craft. And anything else he referred to as prose chopped up into lines.
He taught at CUNY for a while and
yes.
Then at the New School. Did he did a lot of good poets come out of those classes?
Several did, actually. Siv Fox is one person whose name I know has mm-hmm. been writing on a national level. We published, we being King and Cowan, with Jose being the consultant, a poet by the name of Arthur Vanderborg, who was a very wonderful individual. And then we also published a magazine, Bravo, and Bravo published poets from Manila and also from many of them from the workshop that Villa taught.
Well, he started a literary magazine not long after he came to this country, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Clay.
Yes. Now, what about the circumstances of that trip? He came here to study medicine.
Yes, his father basically wanted him to follow in his footsteps. And it's interesting because his father was a physician who happened to be the chief of staff of General Emilio Aguinaldo, who was the head of the Philippine Revolutionary Government when the Philippines launched a revolution against Spain and subsequently fought the United States in the 1899 Philippine-American War. And so his father was somebody who you didn't oppose. Mm-hmm. And so partly to get away from his father, he used his prize money. He had won first prize in a short story contest in Manila and used that money to come to the U.S. But it still wasn't quite a break from his father because he decided, okay, let me try studying medicine. But I think in a quote to the New Yorker, he said, one thing a poet shouldn't do is to tickle frogs. And, you know.
But then he went into law again, hoping, I guess, to please his father. But when that also didn't work, his father cut him off completely, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. There's a famous letter that John gave me a copy of, which in Spanish it says, and I paraphrase, "You left a zero and you will return a zero." This is from his father to Jose.
And gee, that's very supportive.
Yeah.
Well, I guess his father just didn't recognize that his son was an artist of one sort or another. He had actually wanted to be a painter first.
Yes.
I guess that would have been too much.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
As a matter of fact, Jose was suspended from the University of the Philippines, by the way, and for writing a poem. And we actually have that poem in the book. It's called The Coconut Poem. Would you like to hear something
sure.
rather racy that he...
This is when he was very young.
Actually, he wrote the poem when he was 17 years old.
And did he write it in English or in Spanish?
He wrote in English, mm-hmm. yes. And the coconut poem is, "The coconuts have ripened. They are like nipples to the tree. A woman has only two nipples. There are many women lives in a coconut tree. Soon the coconuts will grow heavy and full. I shall pick up one, many. Like a child, I shall suck their milk. I shall suck out of coconuts little white songs. I shall be reminded of many women. I shall kiss a coconut because it is the nipple of a woman."
And that got him tried and fined by the courts in the Philippines for obscenity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
I hope the FCC isn't listening. Or maybe he was too subtle for an American sensibility.
Well,
it's interesting that he's considered a Filipino writer, and maybe he should be. But he spent the bulk of his life, 67 years, in the United States.
Well, that's interesting because I think Villa, like a lot of poets who occupy, you know, two or three different cultural zones, he was lionized in Manila at the same time that he was garnering acclaim as an American poet. And so I do think that he's representative of a poet who's managed to, in one way, render nationality and ethnicity irrelevant, and on the other hand, reflect the influences that both cultures brought to bear on him as a poet.
Well, how much did he speak Spanish, and did he speak Tagalog?
Yeah, he was trilingual. He spoke Tagalog, Spanish, and English.
And do you see the influence of the other languages on his English?
I think in his early poems there are place names that are peculiar and particular to the Philippines. But a lot of the cadences, I think, in the early poems reflect tropical Hispanic heritage.
But he became part of the modern literary scene here in New York to the point where he actually was dubbed the Pope of Greenwich Village. But would anybody who was doing something ambitious have wound up hanging out with E. Cummings and Mark Van Doren and W.H. Auden and Tennessee Williams and Gore Vidal, all the people who were in the village at that time?
Well, I think the closest relationship that Jose had was with E. Cummings. As a matter of fact,
E. Cummings wouldn't meet with him first.
You are absolutely correct. He wrote him three times, and it was not until the third time when he said, "I'll never write to you again if you don't answer my letter." And at that time, in 1941, E. Cummings did acknowledge his writing and invited him. And as a matter of fact, he came with a sheaf of poems, and the next week, Cummings said, "Give the master a chair." So he immediately saw his genius.
Although it's interesting that Cummings, who was so played so much with punctuation would appreciate a poet like Villa, who came to be known as the comma poet because he just sprinkled commas throughout the work.
Well, he didn't sprinkle them. They were after every word, before and after every word. But he did so much like he believed as a Seurat used pointillism, and that it was a visual response as well as a modulating use of punctuation. And Cummings used punctuation to excite and energize his poems.
My guests are John Edwin Cowan, professor of education literacy at Fairleigh Dickinson University and the executor of the Jose Garcia Villa Estate, and Luis H. Francia, who's poet, writer, and teacher, Asian Pacific American Studies program at NYU, and who provided the introduction to a new volume of poetry by Villa, or Villa, however you want to
say
it.
Both are correct.
Called Deviglion. And where does that title come from?
Actually, it's Deviglion.
Deviglion. Okay.
Because it's a portmanteau of the words dove, eagle, lion. And Jose once told me that he was so annoyed that his father had cut him off, would not support him. And so when he published his first book or a second book of poetry in Manila, it was poems by Deviglion, and he told me that dove stood for gentle, eagle would be the freedom of spirit, and the lion the fierceness. And so he thought that his poetry embodied all of these.
He's credited with introducing the reversed consonants rhyme scheme. How does that work?
Well, I think the best thing to do would be to read.
Could you give us a little taste?
Yes, the very first poem in the book, which he rarely used titles, so it's simply poem one. It is what I never said, what I'll always sing. It's not found in days. It's what always begins in half dark, in half light. It's shining so curved, yet rises so tall and tells where the first flower dove, when God's hands lost love. It's a great word without sound, without echo to reveal where fragrance went down. Oh, but it's all of it there, above my poems, a wreath. Reverse consonants refers to the last word in each line where the last two consonants that are sounded are then reversed in an ABAB pattern.
So you really have to be very conscious of it.
Yes.
This is something that you don't hear as much as see.
You see. Well, correct. Once you are aware of it, then you read it again, then you start to detect the sounds that emerge. So it's not a rhyme that's evident right away.
You would have thought that someone from his background would have wanted to include political messages in his work, but wasn't he the leader of the Filipino art sakists, the people who believe that art should be for art's sake and that politics and other messages should be left out of art?
Well, I think he felt that was more the province of prose. And he himself personally had certain political views that you have to remember he was also a national artist in the Philippines for literature. And this was when the Marxists were in power. So he felt constrained by his position and by the fact that he had a part-time job at the Philippine consulate. So, but in person, he would be very critical of the Marcoses. But he felt in poetry, as far as he was concerned, that that was the realm where you left out the everyday world.
Do we see his influence in any poets today?
Myself? And
certainly my own poetry. I believe that he belonged to a tradition of lyricism, and lyricism goes back to Sappho, back around 800. And he and Cummings believe that they wrote the modern, correct form of poetry. And, you know, that also included Marion Moore of that period. So Conrad Aiken, Richard Eberhardt. So there were a number of major poets that wrote in that lyrical frame.
And the new collection with some poems that have never been published before is called Deveglian. It is from Penguin Classics. My great thanks to Luis H. Francia, who wrote the introduction, and John Edwin Corwin
Cowan,
I'm sorry, who edited the collection. It's been a real pleasure talking with both of you.
Well, thank you
very much for
having
us.
Great questions.